Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today for the third time on the show now with Emily Cox.
Hi.
How are you?
I am marvelous. I had a lot of caffeine on the way here.
Good.
We just got done with rehearsal with the teens.
Cool.
So that takes a lot of energy to keep them going.
Absolutely. No, yeah. I taught a musical theater class to 9 through 12 year olds and then 13 through 17 year olds. And I tell you, my demeanor changed drastically when the older kids came in. Yep. All of a sudden I was like, I don't know.
And this is the Chicago Opera Theater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chicago cool. Opera Theater for teens.
Yeah, they've been doing that for a while, right? They've been doing that for like 2 years.
I think this is my third or fourth production with them. I can't remember.
And so they bring in a composer and a stage director. Is that about right?
That is the opera for all. That's for the little kids. What we do is it's basically a paid advanced internship with them. Where all the kids, they get a stipend. They get about $800 a piece. And I've got them.
The teens?
The teens, yeah. And I have them between, you know, certain hours. I set it like a job and I run it like a professional rehearsal process.
Right.
Everybody gets a resume and a headshot at the end of it. And I take them and I teach them basic stagecraft, choreography. But, you know, Chungers is my, I call him my work husband.
Yeah.
He handles one whole aspect of that. He's actually teaching tech. So he has a crew of about 6 or 7 kids, six or seven, and they're all girls, which is really cool. And they run the lights, the sound, they do the curtain, they are on the headsets backstage talking to one another and to us out in the audience.
Holy crap.
Yeah, we teach them how to run the show themselves.
Yeah.
So the night of, we're completely we're there in the audience and I've got a headset in case anything goes wrong, but they're hanging lights, they're designing everything. Friday, the kids are building the set. I do the set design, I do the costume design, I do props, I choreograph, I direct. So we are a two-person.
Holy crap.
We are a two-person production team.
And because I knew you taught, and I knew you worked with kids, but I didn't realize it was like
to that extent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, that's amazing. No, I'm running this like a professional rehearsal process.
Yeah.
And they all get a resume, and they all get an audition workshop and master classes, so that when they leave, they can go out and audition for stuff in the community and represent the program.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, yeah, and I hope that didn't come off like oh, I thought it wasn't a big deal, but I also, just because I know that you also do so many other things. Like, we just finished up, you stage directed Bohème.
Yeah, for Opera Ouvert.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. That was my first time working with adults, believe it or not. I work with very small children all the way up to teenagers. That was my first time working with actual certified adults.
It's really not
certified
that
adults.
Certified adults.
As opposed to those uncertified adults.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was so nice. Like, I gave a note one time and you all remembered it. And I would say, you know, go stage left, go stage right. I need you in different lines. And you knew exactly what I meant. I didn't have to explain it because, you know, none of our kids read music. Like, that was a really good pupper sound. Where'd that come from?
It's coming from that. Is Oscar by that window or is he by the other window?
I don't know.
He might be by the other window.
Okay, so in this segment of Get Off My Lawn, we have a dog that Oscar was very good friends with. I don't know what happened. Like, maybe they got into a kerfuffle, somebody... I don't know. Something.
I think the dog got aggressive.
Yeah, whatever. And Oscar's been freaking out and tore up our blinds. And so now... we have this dog that comes to around our apartment and just barks at our cat, and we don't really know what to do about it. I've like told the owner, like, can you not freak out my cats? But I told this story outside of the show to Dan Grambaugh, who owns dogs, who has a dog, a puppy, and then Gabe, and they were just like, I mean, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. And I was just like, oh my god, I am that old man that's like, get off my lawn.
Which well, no, really here's the deal, is that if somebody is bringing their animal around your property and interrupting them within their own space, and, like, you know, it'd be different if it was outside and it was on the sidewalk.
Like, if we were out there, like, freewheeling with our cat, it
would be a different or, like, thing. In your backyard, that's one thing. But this is, like, their domicile. They live here. And for them to bring them right up to the window and let the dog stick their face in the window and freak your cat out is, like...
Yeah, because I mean,
That's just shitty manners, man. That's just like shitty animal manners. Yeah.
And it's tricky, too, in a unique, weird situation, because our apartment is what they call an English basement, meaning that it's, all right.
British.
Because I know the thing. the thing that's cool about it is apparently there's only 5 of them in Chicago. There are garden-level apartments, obviously, but there's something about the measurements of how low it is to the ground.
Because it's only, like, 3 steps down, as opposed to, like, a true, like, basement.
Yeah.
Like, garden level.
Oh.
See, yeah.
I like that better, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Like, we've got tall ceilings and, like, full-size windows and stuff like that.
Right.
It's great.
You should tell everybody that they do the Great British Bake Off in your kitchen, and that's the reason why.
If they did, I would not feel comfortable with people eating the food, because our kitchen up until today was super gross.
Well, that's because you were at Bohem. I was like ruling your life for the past couple weeks.
No, and I think it's just tricky at all. Well, it's a small space, like it's really hard to keep it organized. But the other thing too is that because we're 3 steps lower, like we're right there, the sidewalk is right outside our window,
right,
which is cool.
Yeah, like our window is dog level.
Well, we had dogs. Did you hear about this is the fun thing about Bohem? Okay, so we staged opera. I'm the royal. We're still British. I staged the opera Ouvert in a way so that I wanted to really include the whole storefront.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to leave the door propped open, and so people were running in and out, and I didn't realize my poor Benoit, no, it was Altindoro, went tearing around the corner, and this guy had tied up his dogs, like, right outside, and they went nuts
in
the middle of the production and scared the hell out of him.
So that actually, I have an addendum to that story. So I mentioned this on the show, that we keep the doors open, and the guy came in to the show.
Oh my God.
Sat on the stage.
That was my favorite.
And he was, like, drunk as hell. Those were his dogs.
What?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Those were his dogs. Because I watched him walk up to the door and basically walk in with us. And I watched him put his dogs in and go in. And when he left, he took the dogs with him. The dogs were gone after he left. That was at the same time.
All week long, we left the door open, right?
And so which
was amazing because people heard the singing and they literally came off the street and wanted to be involved. So that was cool. But it also led to some interesting things during the actual production, including Saturday night. I didn't even see him. I was around the corner running super titles, and I was
slick,
like, face in the score. And people thought that he was part of the show because he walked in and was obviously uncomfortable because he wandered in drunk and was like, oh, there's something. I should sit. And the only place he had to sit was the stage. He's sitting on the stage in the middle of Act 2.
Yeah.
Well, we walked up to him afterwards.
Right.
And Kat was like, I'm really sorry. You know, it's a closed event. Kat Dalton was my stage manager. And he was like, oh, well, can I stay here? And we both looked at him and we went, well, no, honey. That's the stage. It's where everyone's going to be. And he goes, oh. And he drew himself up and he looks at us and he goes, you know what? It's okay. I've seen it. I know how it ends. And I like Carmen better. And then he just like left. This big hug.
Yeah. That's so
crazy. And I was like, I don't know whether that's my new Facebook quote or I should be really offended for everyone or clap. That was just like this epic.
I think that if anyone should be offended, it's Puccini.
I know, right?
Yeah.
You're like, excuse me? But no, it was really great. It was a really great experience. I loved the space. I felt like it was a really good production overall. It was really well balanced. The audience loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Me and Josh, Joshua Lewis Smith of QIO fame. We got plonked down like in the front row
on Sunday.
Yeah,
sorry.
And
about
like
that.
I loved it. We were right there. It was perfect.
Yeah.
For
that space, it's very intimate nightcap. It worked out really well.
No, it was, and like we were like the laugh track for the entire the laugh track and like the gasp track. It was so good.
If like you can't tell by the show, Josh has got a very powerful laugh.
I love
it. It's so good when you're on stage and the stuff you're doing. Well, honestly, Sunday night was crazy because Act 4, I don't know if you were watching Act 4, but I, you know, the part where you want me to, where you had me biff Gabe in the face with the bread?
With the bread.
So
it was the sword fight was. I didn't need to do it with baguettes.
So I took the bread, hit Gabe in the face, and when it came back this way, it hit Joaquin right in the face.
Oh, no!
And so I just watched them go, oh, and I just, like, could not stop laughing. And that was, and then right after that, Musetta comes in to say that Mimi's dying. And so she's in there, and I'm, like, looking at her smiling, and for 5 minutes, I couldn't stop laughing. And so, like, all, and that's why I was, the whole time I had amateur my back to the audience. Hour. It was amateur hour. And I got done, and Josh was like, I could definitely tell that you were dying of laughter during the part where Mimi's dying.
10 years from now, I am going to still be doing food fights in all of my shows because I just feel like it just works so well.
And the fun thing is that you never know what's going to happen because, like, every time you... I would pull out this baguette, and you have to get a bag out of a bread bag, you have to use a lot of force. And so, like, every time it would come out, and half the time it would, like, break in half and go flying across the room. It was great.
Well, it was also, like, you know, that was that found art aspect of it.
Right.
I really love that space. That was so good. And I would love to come back and direct it again.
Yeah.
Well, we're hoping for more from it, but I also want to talk about your upcoming project a bit.
Yes. Okay, so last week was Bohem. This week is Starving Artist, which is my next cabaret adventure that I wrote.
It's a lot. And it's you and Heidi Johnston.
Yes. Okay, so this is... Oh, I love Heidi. I'm like Heidi's biggest fangirl. So I did my last collaboration with Heidi, and she's brilliant.
And is it Heidi Houston?
Yes.
I thought it was Joustin.
Houston is what I call her.
I don't know.
Heidi, if I'm mispronouncing it, she's been very nice and hasn't corrected me yet.
I think it's frequently, I went to school with her, and I think it's frequently mispronounced. And I might be frequently mispronouncing it right now, or if, I don't know. She's so kind, I don't think she would, anyway, sorry.
I'm going to call her Heidi JJ, which is now her rapper name, I've decided.
Well, she's fantastic. She plays harp. She plays piano. She is a composer. I think she does musical theater singing as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She's,
she's working right now I just found out, like, I got online and there's one website that I go to for, and I've been going there for like 6 years now to get all this music that I want to do.
Yeah.
Cause I specifically look for like newer pieces when I go to do my cabaret.
Right.
And there's two or three composers that I've discovered every time I've gotten on this one website. So, I was talking to her about it, and she looked at me, and she was just kind of had this really cool smile, and she went, you know, I work for that website now. And I was like, no, for real? And she's like, yeah, it's a part-time job. She got one of the composers. I'm using two or three of this tag team composition duo in my show because I love their music. She's their personal assistant.
What's this website?
It's called newmusicaltheater.com.
Cool.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I'm finding some real gems on there. But that's where I go. You do have to dig.
Right.
When you go there, you got to dig through, like, they've got hundreds of pieces. But that's sort of like
Are they available for purchase?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All the sheet music there is available for purchase.
Cool.
So, and you can link, all the composers' websites are linked to it and such. But it's a really great website to find new musical works. I really wish we had one like that for opera. It would make life a lot easier.
Well, so I said,
if you're out there, opera world lovers, do that.
Yeah. I said on one of the more recent episodes, we were talking about American opera, and I was just feeling like, sometimes I feel like the thing that really distinguishes American opera from, like, new American opera from new musical theater is just that American opera wants to be less found. It's harder to find. It's just, like, hidden more. Like, yeah. Like, it wants for that for some reason. Like, it likes being, like, the other or something.
That's something that I'm talking about. Yeah. So, okay. So, the basis of this cabaret was, I've been a professional singer for, oh my God, how old am I? Nobody knows. Don't tell. I've been a professional singer now for almost 13, 14 years. And so I've just been collecting little antecedents and little things, you know, along the way that I go on little mini rants on Facebook and stuff like that. But things that I've been thinking about in general about being an artist and what it's like being an artist and what it's like being a working artist, as in working all the time. Like, as in four jobs just to pay the rent, as opposed to working all the time because I'm so good. I meant the other kind of working, where it's like, I'm trying to make ends meet.
Yeah. Precisely, yeah.
So I was talking about it with Heidi when I was doing my last cabaret, which was the one about the dating misadventures. And we were just talking about it. And she goes, you really ought to write this show. And I've been batting it around in my head for a long time. I mean, like years and years. And I finally went, okay, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to do it. And I thought, oh, God, this is going to be really hard. I sat down and I wrote it in a week.
Yeah, of course.
It literally took me a week. And it was because I wrote like 19 pages straight and then had to go back and cut it. And I'm really excited about it. There's stuff in it that I'm doing that I'm really proud of. There's stuff that I talk about in it and I'm not so proud of. I've got audition stories I talk about. I've got, you know, like trial and error stories. You know, what do you do when you walk into an audition and you're wearing the wrong thing? Or like my last trip to New York, I went and did a cruise ship audition because I thought, what the hell? I've never done one of these, right? I may as well try it.
Right.
Nobody told me that the trend, apparently, is to dress for the part.
Oh.
So I was coming from an opera audition. So I had, you know, the dress and the poils and my hair was done, the errs and the earrings and the right. whole nine yards. And I get there and there are all these girls in like sweats. And they said, okay, well, we're open now. And all of them start stripping. And I mean stripping to lingerie, garters, like bustiers, because the show was cabaret and they were dressing for the part. So here I am looking like Jackie O, buttoned all the way up and the pearls, because you know you have to wear the jewel tone dress, but not the offensive jewel tone dress that it discreetly covers your shoulders but gives you just enough cleavage and also hides your knees. So they went through like all these girls in thongs singing in high heels, belting, and then I walked in. In my poils. And I was like, good evening, I'm going to be singing If Ever I Would Leave You. I don't know what I did. But I walked in and I was like, clearly, this is going to be really entertaining. Like, you could just see everybody's eyes kind of sit up and look at me. And I was like, what do you do when you walk in a room like that? So,
yeah.
Nice.
Those are some of the stories.
That no, that's like the exact opposite of like a classical singer's worst nightmare for some reason is being overdressed for something.
It was so bad. Well, and then at that audition, I had a bunch of people in the corner and they were all, you know, standing in the corner whispering and staring. And then they all came over and they were like, are you, we have to ask, are you an opera singer? I said, yes, I am. They all went, oh, and they sat at my feet like Jesus and the disciples. And they were like, so we need to know, it's a lot easier to get into opera than it is musical theater, right? Like, the world's just a lot easier. So what do we do to get into opera? And I looked at him, I went, well, first, go to school for it. Yeah, okay, cool. And I went, no, really, you have to go to school for it. Oh, well, I went to school for musical theater. It's the same thing. And I was like, no, girl, it's not.
And that's actually, it's actually really funny because I think that a lot of opera singers have the opposite thought of like, well, yeah. I mean, you know, I have a degree in opera, so like, why can't I go do musical theater? It will be so much easier. Yeah.
And it's not at all. I mean, it's like, so it's different. Apples and oranges. They're right. Very different worlds. And so different. That was sort of the things that we're talking about. So my biggest topic with the cabaret is I wanted to talk about being a starving artist, not just in terms of money, but in terms of time, attention, the feeling like you're making it in your career. And that's what I base the show off of. There's four different starving topics. One of them is time management, because we're always starving for more time. One of them is recognition, because everybody wants to be pet. I call it the golden retriever theory, where all singers are golden retrievers because we are waiting for someone to come and take us home and then tell us, you know, you're just such a good singer. You're the best singer ever. We thought you're a really good singer. Yeah. Because, you know, we all do that thing where we come off stage and we go, how was it? Was it good? Was it good? Was it good?
I did that to you like three times this weekend.
I know. Well, and it's because we all need that. Right. We need that recognition, right? So we're starving for money, obviously, and food. And then the other one that we're starving for is just that feeling that inner source of recognition. Like, right. we're looking for it externally, but we also want that hunger in our belly.
Yeah.
So we cover all those topics. I talk a lot about auditions because our job as performers right now is auditions. Like, that is our professional job. mean, yeah. if you get yeah. the gig, that's cool, but your job is to find auditions.
Right.
So I talk about that a lot. I talk about the Yap circuit. And after I'm very proud of this show because I'm saying shit that I've yeah. wanted to say for a long time. I am also completely unhirable after this show.
Well, it's cool though, because I think this is your fourth thing that you've written now in the last year yeah. and a half, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember when I first met you, you've done all this stuff in the period of time that I've met you, and it's like recognizably like it's fucking work, and it's something that like I'm sure that you feel like you're growing in skills with, and like you're developing into this thing, and like it's just I think it's really commendable, or not commendable, but like what's the word I'm looking for, like really fantastic that that you're doing this and making your own stuff. That's what I was gonna try and say. And I think at a certain point, like, you've got to think that this is gonna go somewhere, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, okay, so that's the other thing that we talked about. When I was writing it, it was really good to find a collaborator, and Heidi is so amazing. Because I can text her at 2 a.m. and bounce ideas off of her, and right. she's up too, which is cool. Because I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? I'm expecting an answer tomorrow, and within 2 minutes, she's back, and she's like, you know, this might be better. Her brain works a lot of the ways that my brain works. We're kind of ticking on different levels all the time. And while we have one thing simmering, we have another thing that's simmering that we're thinking of trying to tie the two together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good to find a collaborator that can like work with you like that. And yeah. she's brilliant. She can see where it is that I want to go, and she can help me fine tune it and streamline it. So that's been really helpful.
Yeah.
That's really helped with the writing process. Especially since the first time that I did it, it took me almost 2 months to write one. This one I did in a week.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. And it's exactly what I want to say. And it's fun and it's funny, but we both insisted on having something in the show that talks about making your own art.
So the
validation you get from making your own art and casting yourself,
mm-hmm.
which is my biggest thing that I'm like,
that's the interesting thing for me, and the thing that I think is the thing that should be recognized and noted, is that it's one thing to train and prepare for auditions and do auditions and go for things, but the reality of that situation is that you're going up against a bunch of other people to fit into someone else's mold. What you've also been doing in this period of time of doing all these auditions is differentiating yourself from other people in a way that is something that is like, you've fine-tuned your writing abilities in that you're something that took you, did you say a month and a half before, is now mm-hmm. only taking you a week. And that is not something that maybe you would go to an audition for. But like, you can't deny that better informs you as a director, that better informs you as a performer, that better informs you on so many levels. And I think that that's something that, when, you know, it's really interesting, we've talked to a lot of different people about like next steps after getting your degree or doing your work, and it's you enter this period which is aptly named by your recital of your cabaret of being this like starving artist and just trying to cut it and just like, tell me what I need to do to be approved by you, mainstream performance outlet. And it's like, what we end up gaining the most is these things that aren't what we thought that what those people are looking for.
Well, that was the other thing that we wanted to talk about, was that the idea that in order to be a valid artist, you have to suffer mm-hmm. for your art, which is bullshit. Like, yeah. that's complete bullshit. There are so many people that I know who are amazing singers who are miserable.
Mm-hmm.
They're just miserable. And they're miserable because all they do is they go to auditions and get rejected. And I did a lot of research when I wrote this. Like, I don't seem like a person who sits down and is obsessive.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. You're a very thorough person.
I'm an academic at heart.
Yeah.
Like,
don't sell yourself short.
Aww. Aww,
Marie. You're very smart and very thorough.
I spent a lot of time doing a lot of research on the different schools of thought into being a singer and the different paths that people take. And then I went in hard data and statistics about mathematical certainties. such as when you go into a young artist audition as a 22-year-old soprano, what mathematically is, statistically speaking, your rate of success going to be? Because you're putting a lot of money down. And if somebody had told me the numbers years ago, I wouldn't have spent, I probably have no shit spent over $100,000 easily on auditions. Yeah. When you start adding up the money and you start adding all the shit up, right? Had somebody sat me down and said, just so you know, there is another way to have a career. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't require you to pull 16 extra shifts at your four jobs in order to pay for all these things in order to go. Because statistically speaking, your rate of success is less than 1%. And that's before you add in the chance, the 50-50 shot, that maybe they keep the soprano from the year before and they're not even looking.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's something, I'm sure we've talked about this before, that I wish it was presented as an option in academia.
But it's not.
I know, and I wish it was, because they tout and tout and tout this mainstream, like, you know, so you graduate and you continue your lessons, you stay in a busy city or in a place where there's easy access to an airport, and you either pay thousands upon thousands of dollars a month to maintain a livable existence or not so livable existence in a major, prohibitively expensive city, or you just accept the fact that you're going to spend thousands upon thousands of dollars flying to and from whatever major metropolis you are closest to or not closest to. So you could do that, and then you find a teacher who's going to charge you $120 an hour, and conceivably you have to work with them once or maybe twice a week, as well as coach, because heaven forbid that your languages fall by the wayside.
Mm-hmm. And I'm making lists as you're speaking. My fingers of things I want to say. I'm making lists. Because you're so spot on.
And so, and then you know, have to stay in shape. So then you have to do this gym membership, and you have to, on top of that, audition for regional things as well as young artist programs. And so where do you find time to do anything else?
Sleep, eat, have a relationship.
Work.
Make a home for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Get comfortable.
Have a life. Have a social life.
Yeah.
What's that?
I know. And then it's like, you know, and there are other ways, and it makes me sad that basically the lie we're fed coming out of school is, if you stick to this and if you really devote yourself, then you know, you're going to be the next Renee Fleming. And it's like, you're probably not.
so sort of the things that we talk about, and by we, I am again using the royal we, because I am the one doing the speaking on the thing. I don't know why I went down, but it just felt rather so one of the things that we talk about is the flying in and out of major metropolis. Just say New York. Every audition is in New York.
Or Seattle.
And it's all in that damn NOLA studio with the dead bugs in the corner, and it's too hot or too cold.
I never had a NOLA audition. Oh. I always did Opera America. I had a couple in Opera America.
So I'm like, my... And this was something that actually you'll love, because journalists have been nailing people on this lately. There was a really great article that was floating around about a week ago out of Pittsburgh, where somebody reviewed a Pittsburgh theater production, and they said, oh, it's wonderful. It's just like the caliber of the New York theater. And the reviewer was like, I'm reviewing my other reviewer. Why the hell would you say that? What you're saying is, way to go, Pittsburgh. Pat on the head, little kid. But, you know, the people living in New York are way more valid artists. Is that the bar that we are now holding the standard to? And why? Because there is phenomenal performances all over the nation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know what my genuine opinion of... Oh, sorry. Sorry, everybody.
It's odd.
Yeah, it was odd. Do you know what my genuine opinion of most art critics are in these kind of like neighborhood...
They're angry.
Or like different cities? It's the equivalent of being an Uber driver to me at this point, because the people that, not an Uber driver, but like leaving a review on an Uber app ride, because like, you don't want to leave, you don't want to go to a performance unless they're terrible. Like, you don't want to go to a performance and have the performers who at this point, most of them are like, this is their one shot at getting a positive review for their website or something like that. And if you leave, if you're the Pittsburgh reviewer, right, and you're reviewing like the Pittsburgh Young Artist, like unless they do a terrible job, like you're going to give them 5 stars. But like that's the thing is, when it really comes down to it for me with reviews and with opinionated journalism of arts, all you're doing is deciding whether or not they pass or fail, and then floridly like masturbating on top of that. And of course there are some reviewers that do a great job, but I would say probably at least 70% of the reviewers that are doing that is it's just like, oh well, I'm just gonna say more color words to describe the tone of the soprano's voice that I haven't used in my last article.
Well, my problem is just the idea that New York is the pinnacle of all art, and unless you're an artist, you know, sweating in a room that's the size of a bathroom,
mm-hmm.
that's where you fit your entire life in 5x5, you're not a real artist.
So here's my feeling on what you just said, is that I disagree, because coming from the Milwaukee art scene, which is not a high-level art scene, it is... They do beautiful work, and I love what Milwaukee's producing, but in terms of, like, top-tier cities, it's not really up there. But I love Milwaukee, et cetera, et cetera. But if you do a shitty job in a production in Milwaukee, you'll get nailed to the wall. I was in a couple productions. One is coming to mind. I was in a production of... there's this small theater called Sunset Playhouse, and I was in a show called Lumberjacks in Love. And
I would totally pay money to see a show called Lumberjacks in Love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
we should write a show, guys.
It was my professional Milwaukee debut. And it was with Jelena Ponasek. She directed it. Who's the Milwaukee Opera Theater artistic director. And we got a really terrible review from like one of the kind of, honestly, one of the, like the fringe reviewers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was honestly in his best interest to give us a good review, and he did not. And yeah. So I think that more critics are willing to be honest than one would generally be on an Uber review. Cause when, and I think the difference there is that I think reviewers are a little bit more removed from it, whereas, mm-hmm. like, I just sat in Stephanie's car, and she told me about her kids for 20 minutes. I'm not going to be like, Stephanie needs to shut the fuck up about her kids, so that Stephanie specifically, that pops up on her phone the next day, and it affects her job. Like, whereas if I'm Maureen Smith going to the, I don't fucking know, Strawberry Fields Theater, and I don't know, and seeing Kiss Me Kate, and I'm like, that was fucking terrible. I don't care.
Yeah. No, well, and that's fair, but I also will say that I wonder if part of it too is that Milwaukee has such a rich arts tradition.
Possibly, but then...
Because it also seems like there's Pittsburgh a lot of like arts too. Blogs in Milwaukee too.
There are a lot of arts blogs.
That's not a common thing.
No.
No, and I'm. Are you talking about like small cities with small art scenes?
Yeah, and I don't necessarily consider. I think Milwaukee is. I would say if you're gonna like start ranking cities, right? Like, sure, maybe Milwaukee is like a smaller city, but it's definitely for a smaller city, it has one of the stronger.
But I mean, if you're also if you're talking about Pittsburgh is really similar. I spent a summer in Pittsburgh, and like their art scene is thriving.
Yeah, by the way, I nail Pittsburgh and their summer festival opera thing.
Huh?
I nail them for it. Did you see where they got in trouble because they were holding auditions for the soprano position in their summer festival, and they didn't bother to tell anybody that they were just filling it with the soprano from the year before?
Wait, Pittsburgh Festival Opera or mm-hmm. Opera Theater Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh Festival Opera.
PFO.
I talk about that too, because it's too good.
Yeah. talk about that. That was the company that I was with.
I know. Well, summer. Okay, yeah. So they got in good shit.
I don't remember that. What happened with
it? It was like, I think it was like a year ago, year and a half ago. I went and did the auditions here in Chicago for him. And then it came out that they auditioned all these people in New York and Chicago and everywhere. And then they just offered the contract to the soprano who had been there like previous summer.
Oh, God.
And people came out and were really pissed about that.
That does not surprise
me. And what they said was, they put out, and I'm totally paraphrasing this, but they put out a response where they said something along the lines of, well, it's a gamble when you do an audition. And all young artists know that. And so they should know that all the young artists who audition, we keep all their information on file. And so what they're doing is that audition fee in particular that they paid, which was like $75 or $80 to apply, it was really high,
yeah,
is an investment in their future possible employment. And I'm totally paraphrasing that. But it was along still the lines of, and the way that I say it in the show was, and that I wrote because it's my show and I can say whatever the fuck I want. I say it was along the lines of, thanks a lot, suckas. Sorry that we didn't hire you. But think of it this way. Maybe you're paying so that in the future we can continue to run so that maybe one day we might possibly want to give you a job out of the hundreds of Sopranos we have on file. And I was like, so I, and I talk about that. And this is the reason why I'm like, I think I'm unhireable after this, is because I'm like, ethically, morally, for artists to screw other artists like that, that is unforgivable mm-hmm. to me. And that's what you're doing.
That's
what you're doing.
That's criminal because, I mean, I don't know. If you're like gouging poor musicians, because honestly, that's the people who are going out for these are people who are looking for their big break. People who are auditioning for pay to sings.
Yeah, you don't charge $80 for an audition when you're pretty sure that you're just going to use the same person from last year.
Well, that's fucked up. That was a fundraising project.
And maybe they didn't know that they were using the same person from last year. Maybe it just turned out that they went, you know what, after everybody we've seen, we just want to work with Maureen Smith because she's amazing. But
it was not me.
But I'm just saying, it looks pretty shitty. And if we're going to talk about politics and art, because now that's what we're talking about, and I fucking hate politics and art. It drives me crazy. Then you have to start thinking politically. As a company, when I audition for you, I am also auditioning you. Like, I want to know, when I'm working with you, who's your staff? I want to research who I'm singing for. I want to know what it is you're going to offer me in terms of direction. Am I going to learn from you, or am I just going to, you know, stand on stage and be pretty? And maybe that's because I'm in my early 30s. Early 30s. Very early. Very young and attractive still. And I'm like, I no longer want to do the thing at 21, 22 where I'm like, just pick me. I want to work with you. I'm like, okay, I'm very specific with the companies that I audition for now. And I'll throw my hat in the ring for anything once. And then after that, I want to go, okay, who's going to be there? What are they doing? What am I going to get out of this production?
If I'm going to suspend my life for X amount of time, I need to know what the hell I'm getting into.
Yeah. And I've auditioned for things specifically because I wanted to work with certain directors.
That's why I auditioned for Lumberjacks in Love.
Because
I wanted to work with Jill Anna. And I was like, what better kind of sneaky backdoor way than to sing in this weird production with six people where I'm going to play instruments and also sing. Yeah.
But that's something that as a young artist you don't do. You go,
Jelena,
okay.
If you're listening to this, then I'm not ashamed of that.
That's all right.
I had a reflex of like, maybe that was sketchy sounding. I have no regrets.
No, but yeah. I'm like, I specifically hit topics in the show, and one of them is the politics of auditions. Because auditions are a huge part of everybody's life, whether you're in theater or, you know, circus acts or whatever it is. And specifically, it is a political move now because politics and art are just, you know, they're bedfellows.
Yeah.
So how do you go about doing an audition and still making sure that you're taking care of yourself as an artist?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's your number one goal, is to make sure you don't encounter burnout and to make sure that you don't encounter stagnation as an artist. Because stagnation is damnation. If you're not growing, then you're stuck, right? And you don't want to be stuck.
No.
And then one of the other, okay, so we talked about the location thing. I still have my fingers out from what we were talking about. So that's one of the things, is where you live, your life as a singer in particular is affected by transportation mm-hmm. and being able to get in and out of New York City, LA, Houston, Chicago. So that's a big deal, right? That's a life-changing thing.
Yeah.
You can't live in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, if you can't fly.
Yeah.
Right? So then one of the other things that we talked about was the idea of, you know, the Yap Track movement and this fantasy idea, and it is still a fantasy idea, that One day you will encounter the coach, the teacher, the director, who will look at you and say, you are the one, and will tout your career and will mentor you and guide you. That, I don't know that that exists anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are people who will take an interest in you, but the compromario, like, guy who would come along and, like, you know, Florence Foster Jenkins guide you towards your career, I don't think that exists anymore. But we all still act like if we just do the next big break, then my agent is out there. And once I get an agent, they're going to take care of me and all I'll have to do is sing. And that doesn't exist.
In about a month, we're going to be talking to my friend who is, like, he's around our age and he's a successful tenor. He did the Yap Track thing. He and his boyfriend are at their apartment in Philly maybe 2 months out of the year. And besides that, yeah. Peter's traveling all over the place. He does young artist programs. He does Santa Fe. Like, we're going to be talking to him in about a month. And I know for a fact, because I'm one of his very close friends, that, yeah, on paper, his career is textbook. But that, like, you're the one, you're the new Pavarotti, it doesn't happen. It's a lot of gritting your teeth, and it's a lot of singing Mozart requiems in Montana. And
as your listener, there are two things I want you to ask him about in particular.
Sure.
What it's like to live constantly out of a suitcase for over a year of your life, and this one's really important, his pay rate as a young artist. Because there are some of these young artist programs where you go into debt working for them. They pay you, when you add up the hours, less than the hourly wage you would get working at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And that's something else that I said. I did all this math and all this research, and I was like, you realize that every year you are getting further and further away from the American ideal. And it is an American ideal. Like, in Europe, I had a girlfriend who went over right out of an undergrad and was auditioning out for fests all over Germany. And they wouldn't listen. They wouldn't hear. They won't listen to you if you're under a certain age, because they're like, your voice hasn't settled. You're not serious. We don't know anything about you. If you're not 28 years old, we don't want to hear you.
Yeah.
Whereas in America, after 30, for some reason as a woman, you have nothing viable to say as an artist anymore. You're no longer a young artist. You've reached that deadline.
Yeah.
You've bypassed that.
It's that 32 cutoff.
It's that 30. Maybe if they're nice, they'll push it to 32. Men are to 35. So can we talk about the reason why men have five more? And that's another thing I talk about, is that men get away with so much. Men, I love you. I have so many amazing male colleagues. But y'all get away with so much shit in this business. It's not even funny.
Yep. No, we do.
You really do.
There are too many male singers that I know. Not anyone like immediate, like any. But this is, I feel like this is turning into one of those things where it's someone's going to think I'm talking about them. I'm not talking about anyone specific. I'm just saying there are a lot of male singers that I know that that are bad musicians, that don't learn enough their music on time, that aren't good sight readers, that are divas, that want more money.
I wouldn't say that they're bad musicians. I think that there's I think there's an aspect of privilege there.
They rest on their laurels.
Right.
I think that there's an aspect of privilege there because the competition is so much less.
Yeah.
You guys are allowed to be human.
Right.
You're allowed to say, you know what, I was really, really busy and I don't sound my best. Or, you know what, I'm not able to make that because I have a conflict during this time or whatever. I will tell you that I haven't been hired for jobs because I was 2 inches taller than somebody. I can't tell you when was the last time we had an article published about audition wear for men? Let's just start there.
You could
appropriate audition wear for men. When was the last time we ever saw an article published on the internet about that?
Daniel, if you were to show up to an audition in, like, wearing slippers and jersey shorts.
No, I couldn't get away with that.
No, but. Nobody is saying to you, you must appear to be fetally thin, epically young, with an unbelievable resume that reads like a 40-year-old international opera star. Your music and your presentation must be perfect. And while we're doing that, let's talk about how long your dress needs to be. Mm-hmm. Don't show your knees. Don't show tattoos. Show just enough cleavage that they think you're appealing. Do your hair a certain way. You have to be, you know, if you're blonde, you have to be this shade of blonde. Wear jewel tones. Nobody does that shit with you. They tell you to put on a tie and a pair of pants and a nice shirt.
This was what I was going to say, is I feel like there is very little to almost no difference between someone. If you had the same singer do two different auditions, or however you would do this, whatever the control for this experiment would be. The guy that's wearing a button-down shirt, no tie, no coat, nothing, and like khaki pants, versus a guy wearing a suit, and like a nice suit with like fucking clip-on buttons on the wrist, or what are those things called?
Cufflinks.
Fancy cufflinks. And like, you know, nice tie, like hair freshly cut, and like those two men are competing at the same level. And I think that that is like, I don't know how you would compare that to women.
It would be like, do you go like, oh, she came in there and she wasn't wearing any,
was wearing like a sundress, no makeup, didn't have her hair freshly done. And but
she sounded amazing and blew them away. Well, right. Okay, so you guys interviewed, who was it that you interviewed? And they were talking about instrumental auditions. Zappa. And they said that women will take their shoes off so that they don't know that they're walking in heels, so they don't know it's a woman or a man.
Yeah.
And I understand we're in a visual art form, but we have now swung so far over on the visual art form aspect that the voice is almost secondary to the visual aspect sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that I've talked about where, and I will tell this anecdote until the day I die, where I've been double cast before, where my counterpart was thinner than I was, and they got more performances than I did, and we sang the part equally well.
Yep.
And it's bullshit. Like in a run of 6 performances, my counterpart got 4 performances and I got 2.
Well, I'm just pointing out, no international male opera star that I know of has felt so pressured to maintain a body standard that they went through major reproductive reconstructive.
Yeah.
They're having the litter. They went through major reconstructive body organ surgery to lose weight as soon as possible. Mm. Like, and I know that sounds really like an angry feminist, and maybe I am. Maybe I'm just channeling my rage.
No, that's actually pretty easy to ask for, I think. Or like not ask for, but like to be like, there's a clear double standard.
Absolutely.
So we talk about that, and I'm like, I understand statistically that I'm not as high in demand, and that's okay, but can we just really be honest about how kind of shitty that is?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just name it and claim it.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing that we talk about that I was really, really excited about being able to talk about? Oh, making your own art. Because, okay, it started with Amy Poehler's book. Have you guys read Yes, Please?
I love Amy Poehler's book. She's my hero. So goddamn much. I was driving to a young artist audition in Cincinnati from Milwaukee, and I bought her book as an audiobook and played it in the car on the way down because it was like an 8-hour drive and it was an 8-hour book. And so I was like, perfect. So I listened to Amy Poehler on the way there and I listened to Bossy Pants on the way back, and it was the best drive of my life. And it was incredible. It was so good.
Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are two of my heroes. And I don't say that like, oh, they're my heroes. I mean, like, no, for real.
No.
Those two women are working the business. They know how to hustle and they know how to make themselves appealing. And in a business and an industry where past 40 women are losing their appeal, they are thriving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, they have the ability to say, oh, well, they're funny and they're witty, and everybody says, oh, they're smart and they're funny and they're interesting.
They're beautiful. They are
but
gorgeous.
The first thing that you say about them is they're smart, they're funny, and they're witty, and then you go, oh yeah, by the way, they're pretty too. Whereas a lot of other women, we don't see that.
No.
Yeah, that is a great place to be in.
I love that. But so I read Amy Poehler, and I read her book after the first CVAC meeting that I ever went to. Shout out to CVAC. Love CVAC. But I went to the one where they brought in, I don't even remember his name, but I set my phone to record halfway through listening to him speak because I was like, this is like God is speaking to me and I need to be able to remember this later. And I record everything. Like I'm just going to tell you guys, if you ever speak publicly, I'm probably recording you. I'm that creepy girl. Because I want to be able to go back and listen to it again and again and again and remind myself.
And you thought that people didn't think that you were the researching type.
I'm really creepy. I record everything. So I was recording him, and he was the guy who did his big opera in Harlem. And then he had just had, like, something else came out, and he was this Chicago-based artist.
The hip-hopera?
Yeah, hip-hopera.
Oh, man, what is his name?
He was so good. And one of the things that he said was, you know, not every audition requires you to be at the standard of the Met, and who cares? And I went, well, what? You're allowed to not obsess about being, like, absolutely perfect for absolutely everything you do? Okay, that's cool. And then I went home, and I was thinking about it, and he was like, one of the other things that he said was, you need to stop looking for someone to give you work.
Yeah.
You need to stop looking for other people to give you work. And he said, and I say that to you in terms of casting as well. And Amy, in her book, talks about she came to Chicago and couldn't find work anywhere. And so she started her own improv troupe, and they were terrible. Nobody wanted them, but she kept working and working and working. And then she said when she left Chicago for New York, she knew kind of who she was. She knew for sure parts of herself that she wasn't. But what she really liked was that she didn't have to wait for anybody to cast her. Chicago had taught her that she could cast herself.
Yeah.
And I had just moved to Chicago when I read that. And I went, okay, Chicago, teach me how to cast myself.
Yeah.
Teach me how to do this.
Cool.
Show me how to give myself the role. And if nobody is going to hire me to sing a recital, I'll sing my own recital. And if nobody's going to hire me to be in the show, I'll put on my own show.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So first, we have a few minutes left. So the first thing I want to do, Adrian Dunn is his name.
Oh, he was
fantastic.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
God, he was so good.
We have a few minutes left. So the on the note of making your own art, I want to talk about something that we're working on.
I'm so excited. That's cool.
So we have been talking about this summer residency series. We've brought it up a little bit. We're not going to go into depth about it right now because we don't have enough time. But
we also don't really have details solidified.
Well, we're getting
close. But we want to make sure
it's everything. Every duck is in a row.
Before like, we know,
we've all produced a lot of different things, and you know, you don't want to like
until like contracts are signed. And
it's a big project. So what it's tentatively going to look like is we're going to have about 2 months of performances, and we even might have them happen twice a week. And then
best
there'll
case
be some
scenario.
Best case scenario. Mm-hmm. There'll be some recordings in it. And Emma has so graciously she now has a position with Scoppy Magazine. She is our production manager, meaning anything that we do outside of our apartment, Emma has a heavy hand in, which is exciting for us because
she is
whirlwind of energy.
We'll wake up to like 9 text messages of like, I've
so
got
sorry.
No, it's the best of,
it's really
of just like, I did this and I did this and I did this.
I found this
and
rant,
what do you, and what
I
do you think of this? And we're just like,
I emailed these people and I said about this much. And Oscar, I found this work. And by the way, I went ahead and did this for you.
Yeah.
It's the best because we're by nature pretty sleepy.
Yeah, well, and I also think it's great, too, is because what we're starting to get to is this point where, sure, I'm editor-in-chief, Maureen's with managing director. We have people, we have a couple, another person that we're adding on, Michelle Hasso actually reached out about being a sound design assistant, which is very exciting. And we have Josh, who comes on and is a recurring segment, helps us, like, have regular content, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And so what we have now are all these people, very talented, and we're able to go, like, okay, this is your baby. And now we're able to focus on other things. I just wrote an article last night that it should be up in a day or two. We have two. I'm editing, finally. I'm working on this journal project that we want to do because we want to start doing journals on the site. All this stuff, and I'm able to actually focus on the magazine again because we have all these wings that we have, the radio show, the magazine, the studio, like we're able to, you know, compartmentalize that to some extent. And sure, like something that was an original vision of one person is now split off into just like fantastic fucking people.
Collaboration.
And so, yeah. So Scoppy Studio, the residency series, is very much that. We're going to probably be in two different spaces throughout the week, and we'll be putting on very interesting performances. And that,
very diverse. Mm-hmm. Really, we're pulling our best people from like the far reaches of our networks.
Yeah.
It's going to be really like we sat at Hopleaf about a month ago
for like 2 hours.
For like 2 hours, and I was and it.
And one, we were sober.
Yeah. One tangent of the conversation was like, oh, I know this folk singer. And I was like, oh, I know this queer electronic band. Let's put them in the same week. Like that was a legitimate train of thought we had. And so, like, that's the type of content that you have to look forward to this summer.
Yeah.
It's not just going to be, you know, girls in pretty dresses singing, you know, Schubert. There's going to be some of that, though.
But the nice thing is, like, there's some real power and vindication and internal, like, emotional happiness when you're able to look at one another and go, what art do you want to do?
Exactly.
Then let's do it.
What do you think is cool? What do you want to see have
what inspires you? Okay, well, then let's do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody can do it. Everybody can do it.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, at the end of the day, like, we can sit at Hopleaf all we want and talk about, you know, our dream summer residency, but we can't do it without your help. Emma is apologizing. Good Lord. Is applying to...
I apologize a lot.
is applying to several grants for us, but those are not a sure thing. We are at a certain donation level that we can for sure rent a space. Maybe.
Once. And
once. We can rent a space once a month. That is our current budget capability. Beyond that, we are... And that's, like, without being able to do anything else.
Yeah.
So, if you want to see amazing content, you know, from us here at Scoppy Radio, from us at Scoppy Mag, because we pay our journalists... And if you want to see a fabulous summer residency and some wonderful, diverse, thoughtful, fun performances, please consider donating. Mm-hmm. It would be everything to us. And we think that you would have a ball. Mm-hmm. As an incentive, we know that we're going to be doing some smaller scale performances in our apartment that, because we have a small apartment, is only going to be open to monthly donors.
Yeah.
So if
we're going to figure out the best setup to live stream, and we're going to live stream to Facebook those performances, and obviously we'll record them. That's what it'll be. We'll record them and we'll put them up on YouTube, so you'll be able to watch all of it.
Absolutely.
Minute of it.
Oh yeah. Everything is going to be easily accessible, but if you want to be here, and mm-hmm. if you want to eat hummus that I'm going to make, and if you want to drink wine that we're going to pick up from Whole Foods for $3 and just hang out with our cats and... please consider giving for as little as $5 a month, if mm-hmm. not more, if you're able. But if not, five is...
You give more, I'll bring the good wine.
Yeah, for real.
And I got some good wine.
Yeah. No, I she mean... does. If so, please consider it. It would mean... It would be everything.
And
so.
A lot of these works are not only Chicagoland premieres, a lot of them will be world premieres, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we're directly talking to composers who are so excited to have their works recorded and performed.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be the first time.
And we're going to do our best to get these composers to
That's
come.
The other thing. It's like a lot of them are going to come to the events and give talkbacks and talk about their work. And
I know that donations are usually your spiel, but I'm going to piggyback for a second.
Do
if
it.
That's okay. Because what I want to say is we have a lot of ideas and we have a lot of visions, but we also have a lot of ethics and we have a lot of morals. And I think two essential ones for us is that we want every bit of what we create to be free and open to the public. We want mm-hmm. anyone to be able to see it without interference from any aspect of it. And we will work as hard as we can to make that a reality. And our second thing is that anyone that does work for us, either had a thorough conversation with me of being like, I'm so sorry that for the work that you're doing, we can't afford to pay you, but we will one day, I swear. But everyone else that if we hire someone for work, we pay them and we pay them fairly. And that's very important to us. And those are two things that are very hard to do in this field. And the only way that we're able to do that is with your help. And so obviously not everyone can help donate, but we hope that like the people that can will, because you're more than likely filling in for someone that can't. Well, and that is a huge deal to us, and hopefully it's a huge deal for you.
Well, and so please do donate. And if you're not, and I'm so sorry for this, like, for this crazy pitch at the end, but you know, we're about to like launch this thing and we're staring down the barrel of this crazy ambitious thing, and if you're not able to give, it's what I say at the end of every show, if you're not able to give, listen, participate, and share. Mm-hmm. And if you listen, you're going to know what's going on. You're going to be invested in it. You're going to be a part of it. You're going to be a part of our community. If you participate, you're going to come to these events. You're going to meet these people. You're going to give us feedback. We get texts every week from our friends sending us articles and, mm-hmm. and, you know, thoughts, and we get tweeted at all the time. And please continue to participate and share. If you're not able to give, then talk to people about us. Talk to, you know, share it on your Facebook. Inevitably, someone will see it and someone will listen who is able to give, and we'll be able to just grow this network so mm-hmm. much. So please listen, participate, and share.
Yeah. The only other thing that we always say at the end of every episode that I want to make sure we include is all of our social media stuff. You can find us on Facebook under Scoppy Magazine. You can check us out on our website, scoppymag.com. Keep posted this week. There will be articles this week. I'm very excited about it. And we are also on Instagram and Twitter at Scoppy Mag.
I realized I forgot to tell everybody where the event is.
Oh my God, I forgot to give you a plug. It's my fault.
We're very tired.
Yeah.
It's that time of night. We all came out of like working three jobs a day. So the show is called Starving Artist. It is at Davenport's Piano Bar, which is off Milwaukee Ave in Wicker Park. There's some amazing places to eat like right around the corner. So mm-hmm. highly recommend going that. It's with Heidi Utzen, who is amazing. Heidi has written two original songs for the show, which will be getting their world premieres, one of which she is performing herself. She's going to sing it, which I'm really
excited.
Yay! And then she's also, she's in every number that I do. She's either participating with me and singing part of it, or she's singing backup, because that's, she's fun and she's game and she'll totally do that.
Yes.
Nice. But it's at Friday. It's on Friday, the April 28th at 8 o'clock. I hope to see everybody there. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's not just for singers. It's for all artists. And I explain a lot of this stuff for people who aren't artists. So
yeah,
if anyone
and we'll
wants
be there.
To come,
yeah.
then definitely come.
Yeah.
Bring your friends, because I explain everything. I go through like the whole, once upon a time, there were guilds of artists. And up to today, where I'm like, what's up with this whole McDonald's thing? Like, and then we can't sing jingles for them anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so one more time, location and ticket price?
Ticket price is $14 a person.
Cool.
Okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Nice.
And that's pay at the door. You can make a reservation online on Davenport Piano Bar's website. If you click on the bottom on the calendar, you can go to our page and it'll have the Starving Artist. It's like it looks like an easel with paint on it. And you make an online reservation, but you pay at the door.
Cool.
So there's no like requirement to actually pay online or anything like that.
So if you are in the restaurant or service industry, you could pay cash at the door.
Oh, we talk about that too. I got 13 years worth of serving. I got some great stories.
Well, I can't wait. It's going to be wonderful. Cool.
All right. Well, with that, thank you all again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
For yourself.